On the air, online, from New York City, border to border, and coast to coast, you're connected with Tom Sullivan.
Yes, you are. Thank you for coming by. Welcome to the Big Radio Show. Happy Thursday to you. Today is the 29th day of October, 2020. My name is Tom Sullivan. So Florida is the big deal today. Both President Trump and former Vice President Biden are in Florida. And James Carville's all nervous about South Florida. Said they need to build a big turnout, and that's what this is going to come down to, turnout. Who gets more people out is, and anyway, he's all worried about the Democrats need to build a fire under Democrats in South Florida. So all the attention's on Florida because it's always a tight race in Florida. And the latest polling shows it's basically a dead even. So Brad Blakeman, who used to work for W, big Republican guy, he's all optimistic, he says, about Donald Trump in Florida.
Absolutely. And there are good signs in Florida. We're seeing things on the ground. The key to Florida, of course, you know, is the turnout. And for Republicans, it's that I-4 corridor between Orlando and Tampa and Daytona, as well as the northern panhandle. Of the 67 counties in Florida, there are probably 20 that Republicans really have to concentrate on, and they're basically Sanford County, Lake County, and let's not forget Pinellas County, because Pinellas County has predicted the winner of Florida since 2004.
Yeah, that's nice. That doesn't mean anything. Remember, Florida also has two time zones. The Panhandle is in the central time zone, parts of it. So we got that always makes you have to wait on Florida. So even though it's Eastern time zone, you think you got to wait for the central time zone for those polls to close there. Mo Elathy, who is a big Democrat, former DNC spokesman, says, no. Florida is looking good for Joe Biden.
No, it's a very different race, and there are very different underlying dynamics below that. Look, Florida is always going to be close. In the last decade, there have been 7 statewide elections in Florida decided by 1.2% or less, right? It's just the nature of the state. Yeah. When you scratch below the surface, though, there are some good signs for both campaigns. But if I'm in the Biden headquarters, I am feeling very encouraged by the early vote. Democrats have a 300,000-plus early vote lead at this point. I'm looking at his strength in with the early vote in some of those rural counties that Brad was talking about. The president crushed Hillary Clinton in those, but Biden's margin right now, the Democrats' margin right now in the early vote in those is very encouraging for Democrats. And then finally, I'd say the polling numbers with seniors and with white voters right now show a much more competitive race, shows Joe Biden leading with those constituencies. So those are things that I think Democrats can build around here in the final days.
Well, Mo's a good, smart guy, but he knows as well as anybody, that's his spin, about early voting means absolutely nothing. And the guy who taught me that is Chris Steigerwald, who always shakes his head when somebody comes up with early voting numbers. Got 30.
Doing a little, we're rearranging the furniture a little bit before we go into the final days of the election. And we're going to move for our battleground states. We're going to take Wisconsin and we're going to move it to a lean Democrat from a straight toss-up state. The polling has been so consistent in Joe Biden's favor and by margins at outside of the margin of error sometimes. And given everything that we know and early votes and all, Wisconsin looks like it's going toward the Democrats. Then we go down south. Let's look at Georgia, which is a state that I was very skeptical about Democrats' chances in just based on history and what an electorate looks very different in a presidential year than it does in a midterm midterm election, and I was very skeptical about Democrats' claims. But here at the end, there's no way to look at it except for this, that Georgia is a toss-up. And I can't tell you today who's going to win that state. Hyper-competitive, just as much so as Florida. And then Minnesota was a state that the Republicans had once upon a time said they were going to be competitive in. They're not, and that's just a little housekeeping. Right.
Yeah. So he doesn't think Minnesota is going to be a win for the Republicans. Wisconsin moving towards the Democrats, and Georgia a toss-up, and it should be a clear Republican state. So, of course, they go to Kayleigh McEnany, and she works for the man, so she's going to, of course, say that, oh, yeah, that's clear that Donald Trump's going to win Florida.
As of yesterday, we are 6 percentage points ahead of Democrats in the early vote. That is historic. That is historic turnout for Republicans. Statewide, we have won 10 days straight of early voting. And on Election Day, when the Trump coalition turns out, we will win the great state of Florida. We will win this election.
Yeah, there she goes, down the same path as Mo about early turnout. Chris Steigerwalt had to chime in on that one.
Florida is the swingiest swing state. It's the biggest swing state. It is the Megillah. It is so big. It has so many electoral votes, and it is so evenly divided. Remember, when you think about Florida, you've got basically the northern half of the state is Alabama, southern half of the state is New Jersey, and you've got Ohio in the middle. And every 4 years they do battle. They're in Hillsborough County for the very fact, and there's Pinellas County on the other side of Tampa Bay, and then there's Orange County out to Orlando. That stretch in the middle of Florida is every 4 years they get to pick the president pretty much, because a Republican can't really win the presidency without Florida. I don't pay any attention to what Kayleigh McEnany says about who's going to win Florida, and because of the early vote, and I don't pay any attention to Democrats who say they're going to win Pennsylvania because of the early vote. I discount it all, and here's why. We're going to see about a 50% increase in early voting this year because of the pandemic. So that blows the doors off of all assumptions, right? Whatever numbers are going to come in, that's why we're going to count. That's why we have a decision desk. We're going to look through all this stuff. But I'm not listening to partisans when they're claiming big advantages in a year where we're going to scramble everybody's eggs.
Yeah, no question about it. So he always has said that early voting means nothing. And I'm wondering if so many people are out early, either dropping off their ballots or voting on early in-person voting, that on Tuesday, it'll be empty. You'll be able to walk right up to the front of the line and do your voting. I have no prediction, but I'm going to be curious to see if that is, in fact, what takes place. So we talked about Wisconsin and how it is now leaning Democrat. Well, the Republicans have more problems than just that. They apparently had $3 million from their bank account stolen. Somebody hacked. No. This isn't the Russians hacking the DNC. That was 4 years ago. This is somebody hacking the Republican group in Republican Wisconsin GOP committee. And they've taken off with the money. Here's the guy who runs Wisconsin Republican Party, named Andrew Hitt.
So last Thursday, we first noticed some suspicious activity going on. And with our IT accounts, with our email accounts, we immediately started to work with our IT firm and RNC IT team. By Thursday night, we had discovered that we had been the victim of a cyber attack. By Friday morning, we understood the full effects of that attack, being $2.3 million going to hackers instead of the vendors that were going to be paid that money. We immediately went to the FBI and began working with them. I know they're actively working on this. We've had regular correspondence with them, providing them information. Our IT firm has been working with them as well. So I know that they're actively working on it. It's really important to note, though, that the president's campaign, the RNC, the plans that we have in place for Wisconsin are full steam ahead, full we are moving forward to all of those. This money obviously was for services rendered. So we need to make sure we pay those vendors. But the president, the chairwoman, believe in Wisconsin, and we're going to deliver Wisconsin on November 3rd.
Yeah. Okay. Hope you do. But Dr. Steirwald, he says it's not looking good. Wouldn't you think if you were running a political party in a state or in the national office that you would have your IT stuff really tied down tight, knowing what happened to the Democrats in 2016, that you'd want to make sure that no hacker could break into your system, that you would have really good security? Apparently not. So he went on to talk about the damage that has been done in Wisconsin.
Well, like I said, we have had our plans in place with the president's campaign, with the RNC. They continue to move forward with those. They have been in place for some time now. So we're very confident in being able to deliver what we intended to deliver. I can say that since Thursday, I've continued our plans moving forward, making sure that we're targeting the right voters and getting them out. But no doubt, we have to pay that $2.3 million to the vendors who have already delivered those services. So, you know, if there are viewers out there that want to support us, they can go to wisgop.org so that we can get those vendors paid for the services they've provided in support of President Trump. We're going to win Wisconsin. This race is very close. When you have a close race like we have, it comes down to ground game especially. We have a ground game. We have the biggest ground game we've ever had in the history of the Republican Party here, thanks to the president, thanks to the chairwoman, and all of their efforts. The Democrats have been up in the cloud. We've been down here on the ground knocking on doors. We've actually had over 12 million voter contacts, 10 million phone calls made by volunteers here in Wisconsin, over 2 million doors knocked by volunteers here in Wisconsin. Democrats aren't doing any of that. They are virtual. We got back to campaigning on the ground in June. We have a very strong team. We are closing strong. I'm actually very confident that we are going to deliver Wisconsin for the president, Andrew, on November 3rd.
He's solid, man. He's on it. That's all nice, and that's all part of the strategy, obviously. But the real, he touched on it, the real test will be, I think, in this election, like in most elections, it's who has the best get out the vote group, people that are ready to go and drive, you know, people to the polls do everything you can to get people out their door and to the polls. And if you can do that, you have a better chance of winning than the other guy. We'll be right back.
Your screener is the rudest person I have ever heard in my life.
You have probably the best call screener in radio.
You're with Tom Sullivan.
Oh, man. So, we've got politics coming out of our ears. Where's the other politics one I wanted to play here as we were getting? We've got a bunch on the economy I want to talk to you about. But when it comes to politics, I guess this is everybody's claiming, you know, they're doing the spin. They're all spin meisters. So it just is what it is. Here's the president and Joe Biden cut one, a little montage of them speaking earlier today.
My plan will crush the virus and make our strong. We're going to be stronger than ever before. Our country will be stronger than ever before. Biden is the candidate of layoffs, lockdowns, and misery. I am the candidate of jobs, vaccines, and prosperity.
But this administration has just given up. Over the weekend, the White House Chief of Staff, Mark Meadows, went on television and admitted that they've waved the white flag and declared surrender. He said, quote, "We're not going to control the pandemic," end of quote. The American people deserve so much better than this.
We're going to be great. Vote for me. The other guy is terrible. There's one more of them going at each other.
If you vote for Biden, it means no kids in school, no graduations, no weddings, no Thanksgiving, no Christmas, and no 4th of July together.
We can't afford 4 more years of a president who, instead of fighting the virus, attacks doctors. We can't afford 4 more years of a president who'd rather spend his time desperately trying to strip people of their health care than even once bother to put forward a health care plan on his own. We can't afford 4 more years of Donald Trump.
No. That if you vote for Biden, there's not going to be any more weddings or graduations. No 4th of July's. I the world's going to end. What worries me about this is I find this kind of humorous, which is another worry. But the problem is there are people that listen to this and take it seriously. They believe every word. Oh, no. No more weddings? What about Johnny's graduation next year? Oh, no. He's not going to graduate. People believe this stuff. And they vote. So I would think most people have made their mind up by now, but maybe not. They talk about the late deciders and which way they go. So it's I find it all fascinating. Like I said, I find a little bit of humor in it because it's so outlandish that the world's going to come to an end if you vote for the other guy. I can't find it right now. I was looking during the break. They've done a bunch of studies since World War II about under Democrats or under Republicans, who's done better, who hasn't. The economy has done almost, you have to go back and get into the decimal points where there's been a difference. They have different ideas and they have different ways of executing. Everybody's trying to do the same thing. They're trying to keep the country healthy and strong and grow it. And they have different versions of doing that. But what's amazing is when you look at the averages, both the Democrats and Republicans economically have been pretty much the same, down to a decimal point. So today we got some economic news. I do want to talk a little bit about that before we run out of time today. It was what we were expecting. The third quarter gross domestic product grew an all-time record high, smashed all records, up 33%. That's because in the second quarter it was down 31%. And in the first quarter it was down 5%. Remember, March was in the first quarter. So we are still 1.7% below where we were with the economy on January 1st. So we haven't recovered, but we did a big chunk of it coming back as we knew we would. I mean, if you sold nothing last month and you sold 33% of widgets this month, you would be up 33%. And a lot of it is, I mean, we were almost down to zero on our growth. We were below zero. So it's interesting, but I want to dig into these numbers with you and about the number of jobs, first-time jobless claims off. Time it is. Well, so the economy, it gets kind of important for political purposes, but so the third quarter GDP, broadest measure of the economy, gross domestic product, went up 33% after going down 31% in the previous quarter and down 5% the one before that. So we're expecting not only this quarter, but also it'll be next quarter, the fourth quarter that we're in right now, should have maybe a 5% increase, which normally would be big, but it's still reverberating off of the shock waves of the shutdown of the economy back in March and April. So today it's a 33% report. It comes in roughly a month after the end of the quarter. That's the first look, first of three. Then a month from now, the end of November, they will give us the adjusted number after they get more information and tally it up. Then a month after that, which will be the end of December, they will give us the third and final report on the gross domestic product, and that's the one that gets printed in the history books. So there's always adjustments, but not a lot. It was a big rebound, no question about it. So if you look at jobs from the economy, in March and April, we lost 22 million jobs. There are still 22.6 million people receiving unemployment benefits. There's another 11 some million people. I'm sorry, half. It's about half. 51% have gotten jobs back. So we're adding jobs, and people are still laying off people. The first time jobless claims, the number of people who walked in to an unemployment office this week for the first time, 751,000. It's a slight improvement over last week, and the last 5 or 6 or 7 weeks have been slowly improving, but it's still way, way, way too high. We used to, back in normal times, 150,000, 200,000 first-time jobless claims. This is 751,000. Restaurants in Chicago, tomorrow, I don't know what time it goes into effect, but no indoor dining because of the virus growing rapidly in Chicago. Getting cold. You can't dine outdoors. So that's going to shut down restaurants in Chicago starting tomorrow. Etsy, you know, the crafts, the online craft store, if you will, that has a bunch of, you know, you can go on there and buy stuff that people have made. And you buy it from the person who made it. It's great for, you know, people at home that are artistic or crafty. Anyway, Etsy's saying they sold a bajillion masks. I mean, there's so many people making masks out there, and they've been making designer masks and cute masks and masks with cartoon characters, you name it. Well, Etsy's saying that mask sales are peaking, which I don't know if that says anything about the virus. It just says, well, how many masks do you have? How many masks do you need? I've got one in each car. I've got a box of surgical masks. I've got a supply of a handful of N95 masks. I got more masks than I need. I don't know. How many masks do you have? Alexander the Great, how many masks do you have? Three? I got two Yankees masks, one for each car. I get all kinds of, hey, all right, I like your mask. So I got two Yankees masks, and then I've got a box of surgical masks, and then I ordered these N95s for if we're really going to be around something really serious. I've got five of those. See, I don't need any more masks. Oh, and I have an Etsy mask. Yeah, it's the first one I got because you couldn't find a mask back in March. But no, they were sold out. So I found somebody on Etsy, and I got this nice mask. I don't know. It's green. Has a design on it. I don't know. It's kind of, I don't wear it. You know why? Because it doesn't, you have to tie, it's got two ties on each side so that you have to tie it behind the top of the back of your head, another one down near the bottom of your head. And I don't want to sit there and, I guess you could tie them into some sort of thing went around your ears. So a little bit on, there's your mask economy number. I don't know what that means, but Austin Goolsbee, economics professor. I think he's still at Northwestern. He was an economic advisor to Barack Obama. He's a liberal economist, but kind of a moderate liberal economist. And he starts talking today about, of course, Joe Biden's economic plan.
Well, I think President Biden's Build Back Better plan is kind of the blueprint for what he would want to do. And that's money to infrastructure and investment in manufacturing. That's money to child care so people can go back to work, and the care economy, getting health care to more people. And that's money for climate change, for racial equity, and addressing some of the energy needs. And I think in that space, those are the policies that he wants to pursue, that the focus should be on getting money and relief to working people and ordinary Americans. And let's be less concerned with figuring out how to cut taxes for the highest income people.
Yeah. See, Austin also is a pretty good spin meister. And that's the thing. There's a liberal agenda, and that's what they're going to do. Let's go down to cut 21. This is Austin Goolsbee and Sandra Smith, who was interviewing him, going back and forth.
No, and I'm sure you saw the other analyses that showed, for example, from Moody's, that the Biden plan would add 7.5 million more jobs than the Trump plan would. So, I mean, don't just cherry pick one study to get an outcome.
Well, I hear you talking about popularity of raising taxes. We're talking about mathematics, numbers. You're an economist. I mean, what does that do? What does that do to business incentive if you raise corporate tax rates?
The corporate tax rate was cut more than has ever been cut. It did not generate an increase in investment on a sustained basis. It led to a massive payout of dividends and share repurchases. So the groups that you're talking about here with the Trump plan, high-income people and big corporations, they haven't had a recession. The billionaires have seen their wealth this year go up $300 billion.
This is the tax foundation talking about all taxpayers, by the way. The result on all taxpayers.
Okay, Sandra, I'll take it from here. So Austin is kind of right. Corporations did use the money that they got from the tax breaks for dividend buybacks and for paying out shareholders the dividends. But they also hired a whole bunch of people. Remember Barack Obama said that, what do you have, a magic wand? No. He gave corporations a tax cut, and they went out, and they expanded, and they hired more people, and they bought back shares, and they increased their dividends. They did all of that. So you wonder, how did Donald Trump get the unemployment numbers down to an all-time record low? That is how it happened. And as far as Austin's claim about billionaires made $300 billion, you know where they made the $300 billion from? Because they don't need an income. They put all their money into the stock market. And what has the stock market done? It has skyrocketed. Maybe you don't care, but the billionaires made, well, if you really want to focus in, take a look at the guy who owns Amazon, Bezos. He made billions. So what?
That's all that I bring to this microphone every day. I have a huge disdain for politicians, and I don't care for either party.
Okay, one more from Austin Goolsbee. This is just all about taxes, and he says the capital gains tax, because Joe Biden says he wants to raise the capital gains tax, and Austin says that the capital gains tax is not a successful strategy. Let's listen.
Cutting the capital gains tax when 83% of the capital gains in the country go to the top 1%, that is not the recipe for broad-based expansion in the country. And when we have cut capital gains tax rates in the past, It has not generated magic beanstalk means growth. That's nonsense. What we need are investments for ordinary Americans. We need to cut taxes for lower income working people, not a $30 billion tax cut for billionaires on top of the $2 trillion we already cut taxes for billionaires.
Okay, so awesome. And so I have to wrap it up, but based on Biden's plan, what kind of growth do you think that we would see if those policies that he's laid out, if he implements them, he's elected president, he puts them in place?
Yes.
What kind of economic growth are you forecasting?
The growth I'm forecasting and that the other experts are forecasting is substantially more job.
Give me a number. Give me a number, though. GDP growth, Biden presidency.
Over 4 years, I'd say aiming in the 2.5 to 3% range would be outstanding.
Whoa. So over 4 years, 2.5 to 3%. Did he mean he didn't mean per year. He did over 4 years. That'd be less than 1% a year. He also talked about Moody's and how they were the chief economist at Moody's. I love Moody's for their analytical stuff on bonds, but it's Mark Zandi. Mark Zandi is consistently wrong. He's the J curve. Whatever he says, do the opposite. You'll win. Zandi has no idea what he's doing. He's always wrong. So about cutting capital gains, and his thing is jealousy because of the fact he says 83% go to the top 1%. That's because a lot of the rich people in this country own a lot of stock. So you get capital gains when you sell stock at a profit. You can sell real estate at a profit, sell capital assets at a profit. A lot of things besides stock. So the problem with this is capital gains boost money to the Treasury. Every time they have cut capital gains, the Treasury has received more money, not less. People that have a lot of wealth and a lot of profits built up in the stock market or real estate are looking at dumping those things before the end of the year if Biden gets elected, so they do not have to pay extra taxes. But here, let's do a little flashback. Here's 1997. President Bill Clinton, in his budget, talking about capital gains taxes.
To honor our commitment to bipartisanship, the plan allows taxpayers to exclude 30% of their capital gains from taxation. It also gives a capital gains tax cut for buying and selling a home. The capital gains cut is targeted, more prudent, and less likely to explode the deficit in the years to come than the plan of the congressional majority.
Now, he's not the only Democrat president that has done this, and they have it's been proven time and time again. You drop the capital gains tax, and tax revenues go up. Does it boost GDP? No, to Austin's point, but he was picking the wrong point, but that's him. He knows how to spin. So I look at this, and the biggest complaint I think I have about what Austin was talking about is all of these promises about what middle-class tax cut. Politicians do it. Austin's a spin meister. The cost of a middle-class tax cut, since most people live in the middle class, if they gave, let's say there's 200 million people in the middle class, if they gave 10 bucks to you, a $10 tax cut to everybody in the middle class, that would be a $2 billion hit to the Treasury. That's why they don't do it. If they give you a $100 tax cut, now we're $20 billion hit to the Treasury. So they can work around the fringes. They can give extra benefits to the poor. They can give earned income credits and raise those. Does it cost money? Yeah, but nowhere near what it costs to give a tax cut to the middle class. That's why they promise, but they rarely, rarely ever deliver. I'll even give Austin the benefit of the doubt that he was thinking 2.5 to 3% growth per year, which is where it's been for the last, 8 years of Obama and 4 years of Trump. It's been 2.5 to 3%. So he's saying no change, nothing. This is why I say a lot of this is like the guy on the street corner with the peanut shells. They move them around. They're moving all these things around, and in the middle of the moving them around, they're telling you, by the way, don't keep your eye on the peanut shell, but I'm going to make sure that you come out better. Oh, we're going to give you a benefit. You're going to come out better. Do you ever really come out that much? Do you really feel there was a tax cut that did benefit middle class in the Trump tax cut? The numbers are in. The group that got the biggest percentage increase in money was the lowest income. Because they were so low, you didn't have to give them a lot to have the biggest percentage increase. That's kind of what happened. So this is the kind of spin that you'll hear about. I'm going to give, whenever somebody says, I'm going to give you a tax cut. Who was the politician who promised a chicken in every pot? It's just a new version of that exact same thing. Nothing changes over time. But finally, after being hammered yesterday, so the news came out about the GDP going up 33%. Market opened, went down 200 points. Then everybody was all excited about the tech stocks releasing their earnings after hours today. Apple posted their best September sales in history. Amazon sales up 37%. Huge numbers. The market finished positive, up 139 at 26,659. The S&P up 39. The NASDAQ up 180. The price of gold down $11 to $18.67. Oil hammered today, which is a bad sign saying the demand, the economy isn't going to be that strong. Down a couple of bucks to $36 for one barrel of oil. On the comment line, this caller says he knows why 2020 has been so strange.
Hey, Tom, Deacon Smith, are you finally ready to admit this crazy stuff going on in the world? It's straight out the Bible. Matthew 24, Mark 13, Luke 21, 37, 27. Be bold, man. Be bold.
Wait a minute. Right, Mark. Right. I guess I'll never find out. I forgot to write them down. This caller says, wear your mask.
Wear your mask. Better to be a live sheep than a dead jack.
Oh. I think I know what that last word was.